divide developing countries. And what we're seeing here is a real big game of divide and rule, of trying to pick off the most vulnerable. We've heard it time and time again that the poorest countries are being wrong, capitals are being wrong, they're being told you have to blame other rich developing countries, and we're being set up for an argument about survival versus development, when in reality we should be setting up a conversation about the rich elite's pattern of consumption and their lifestyle against the majority of the world. This is the 1% versus the 99%.
I want to thank you all for being with us. We will be here tomorrow covering the end of the COP, though it may not end tomorrow. Asad Rehman of Friends of the Earth, Kumi Naidu of Greenpeace, and Antonia Yuhas, a journalist covering the COP here for Newsweek. We'll link to her piece, Suicidal Tendencies, as well as all of the position papers that groups have been putting out. I'll be speaking here in Paris Friday night at 9 p.m. at the Place to Be. That's 5 Rue de Dunkirk near Gare du Nord. The talk will be also live streamed. For information, go to democracynow.org. And for our full coverage of COP21 here for the 2 full weeks of this global meeting, you can go to democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Carla Wills, Laura Gottesdiener, Dina Guzder, Amy Littlefield, Nermeen Sheikh, Sam Alkoff, Ravi Karan, Steve Martinez, Hani Masood, Juan Carlos Davila, Pedro Rodriguez. Special thanks to John Hamilton, Dennis Moynihan, Ariel Boone, Chuck Skurich, Julie Crosby, Becca Staley, Hugh Grant, David Fruit, Mike DeFilippo, and Miguel Noguera. Our website is democracynow.org. You can read the broadcast. You can get podcasts, video, and audio. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us from Paris, France.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8:01. Coming up next is Voices from the Edge Talk Radio with our host, Joanne Hardesty. Today's guest is co-founder of Right to Dream 2, Ibrahim Mubarak. We'll talk about Portland's declaration of a housing state of emergency and what that means to the increasing number of homeless people living in our city.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Charles Adams Family and Friends, an art show of 52 original artworks by the creator of the Adams Family and beloved New Yorker cartoonist. The show is up through December 13th at the Saruman House, 5131 Northeast 23rd Avenue in Portland. Saruman House is open Thursday and Friday from 4 to 8 p.m. and Saturdays and Sunday from noon to 4 p.m. Again, that's Charles Adams Family and Friends, an art exhibit up through December 13th at the Saruman House in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Fiesta Flamenca Navideña on Friday and Saturday, December 11th and 12th at 7 p.m. at the Headwaters Theater in Portland. Fiesta Flamenca Navideña will celebrate the season in flamenco style with performances by Three Shine Flamenco, Stomptown Flamenco, Coro Navideño, and more. Again, that's Fiesta Flamenca Navideña. Friday and Saturday, December 11th and 12th at 7 p.m. at the Headwaters Theater, 55 Northeast Farragut Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events. KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of music, nature, and storytelling, an experiential weekend workshop from January 8th through the 10th at Cedar Ridge Retreat and Conference Center in Vernonia, Oregon. Storytelling as a practice broadens our perspective and helps us understand the significance of our experiences. This workshop teaches the roots of storytelling and delves into the storyteller's mind. No prior experience required, and the deadline for registration is December 18th. Again, that's Music, Nature, and Storytelling, a weekend workshop January 8th through the 10th at Cedar Ridge Retreat in Vernonia, Oregon. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning, good morning. I'm Joanne Hardesty, and welcome to Voices from the Edge. It is my pleasure to have in the studio this morning Ibrahim Mubarak. Thank you so much for being here. I want to set the case for our listening audience before we jump into our conversation. It's also my hope that Jose Sierra will be here from Hazelnut Grove, to be part of this conversation as well. So you may know that on September 23rd, Mayor Charlie Hales declared a housing state of emergency in the city of Portland. And on October, shortly thereafter that on October 7th, the city council passed a series of measures to address this so-called housing emergency. And so, what's happened? So far, the county and the city combined have vowed to spend $30 million on homelessness. The mayor has also announced the opening of a women's shelter that is now operational. Is that correct?
Yes,
sir. Is operational. The mayor has said that by the end of this year, which means there's 2 weeks left, that all houseless women would be off the street and be sheltered in some manner. And so we're going to talk a bit about this shelter and who it works for and who it doesn't work for in a little bit. In addition to that, this pledge by the city seems to be focused around urban renewal areas, but most of us who live in the city know that that's where the largest displacements are taking place, is in urban renewal areas where development is taking place, and what's replacing what was there are properties that people who've lived here can't afford to live in. But I'm just setting the stage right now. As we know, there are many organized efforts. A Home for Everyone is part of a coalition effort that is working with the city, supposedly, to address this issue. Well, I see the facial expressions. You can't see them, but I can. But Ibrahim's going to be able to jump in here in just a few minutes. We know the Community Alliance of Tenants has done a really good job of helping to highlight just how massive this problem of people being unable to afford to live in the city of Portland. What the city says is that the last official count from 2015, and you may know that the governments do a one-night snapshot to give people a perception of just how bad the problem is. And so the official count says that 3,801 people are homeless in 2015 as of that one-night count that they did. They allege that 1,887 of those people have no shelter at all. 872 are in temporary shelters around the city, and 1,042 are in some transitional housing of some kind or another. And so we're definitely going to debate whether or not these numbers are fuzzy math or what's the reality around them. But having said that, the other thing that is consistent when the community notices the high number of houseless people is that when people organize, like in the case of Hazelnut Grove, the police start using those new organizing vehicles as a place to push houseless people to. So we're going to get into that conversation as well. So that's kind of the landscape, Ibrahim, of what we, the public, have been told based on our official leaders. I also understand that Right to Survive has been looking for a place for a while, supposedly with city help. So today will be an opportunity to give us an update kind of on where you are in this partnership with the city, as well as where we are as far as getting a place, a warm, dry, safe place for people in our community to be able to shelter. So again, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Wow.
It's always a pleasure to have you here. So let's start with Right to Survive. What is the current state of Right to Survive?
The right state of Right to Survive and Right to Dream too is that we still on a property on 4th and Burnside Northwest, right at the Chinese Gate, downtown Portland. It became a trifold or a tripod factor with us, our organization, the city officials, and let's say PDC and the landowners, the Michael Wright and Dan Consett. As everybody know that Michael Wright and Dan Consett was disgruntled landowners when the city wanted them to vacate their property and they tore their business. Now, the only way they was making money to survive in this country, in this state, in this city, then every time they tried to put something on that property to make a living on, the city would say, no, no, no. So he mentioned that he would give it to the homeless guy that helped found Dignity Village, and that's when I came to play. And so he allowed us to put Right to Dream 2 on that property, which people were saying it wouldn't last for 30 days, and now we're going on our fifth year. However, he wasn't able to sell that property
right
until a bunch of organized houseless people got on that property. The city said, this can't happen. They bring an awareness to what we're not doing.
Right.
And so we don't want them. They right in the mainstream of downtown. We don't want people to see the ugliness in this country that we're not taking care of the people.
Right.
So they offered to buy his property because they wanted to redevelop in the mm-hmm. name of development and gentrification and colonialism. And so we were standing in the way because the guy who wanted to build on, the developer who wanted to build around there said people wasn't gonna come there because the houseless people was there. I mean, like we're a plague or something. So
right.
We not going there, they got diseases and everything. So they offer us to move to another spot, and when we wanted to move, developers didn't want us to go into the Pearl District because, again,
too many rich people over there.
And they may see a cheaper way of living and may not patronize those businesses or those high rises that they're paying. So they paid us an amount not to go into that area under the care of the city, and then the whole thing become a little complex where we help the landowner negotiate to sell that property. We said, we'll leave this property if y'all find us a good place to stay when working with us,
right,
and buy the Cassetti's land. Because when you are friend people, I don't think people really know what friends are or partnership are. Mm-hmm. When you're a friend and a partner, you do that for life,
right.
You know. So we wasn't going to abandon Michael Wright and Dan Cassetti. We spoke up for them. So those are two things they had to do, was to help find us land
mm-hmm.
with the money the Pearl District developers gave them
right.
and buy that property from the Wrights and Cassette. However, they didn't want us to buy that property from them because they still think that if we're there, they can't develop around us.
Right.
So
PDC, mm-hmm. let me make sure I have this right. So PDC provided Right to Survive with some financing?
No, the Homer Williams uh-huh. and Dyke Dane
developed. Oh, so the developers.
Yeah, they provided money.
Oh, yeah, because Homer knew he was going to make some real money once you guys moved.
Yeah,
huh?
Yeah, and I think he is. You see all the hotels and the high rises
lots of cranes.
They ain't losing.
They not losing. No. And so Homer Williams, and who's the other developer?
Dyke Dane, you know. Like.
Yeah, I know. Okay, Dyke Dane. How long ago was that? That was about a year ago?
Yeah, it's about a year ago.
And that money was supposed to help you
purchase land
right.
or get land or rent land or lease land, however right. you want to put it.
And they were supposed to help you identify that land?
Yeah, yeah.
And they were working with PDC to make that happen?
I think they was working with anybody that could to find us, because they want us out there.
Because they want that. Yeah. And so
PDC bought that land, wanted to buy that land from the Rights and Consent,
right,
in order to develop it.
Uh-huh. So I see. Yeah. I see.
But then they thought we wasn't going to leave because it wasn't no land found for us yet. So they made it kind of lucrative to the landowner, saying, we'll give you $10,000 a month as long as they there for a year until October 10th of next year, of 2016, and then we'll give you the rest of the money. But if they don't move, you have to give us that $10,000 a month we've been giving you back.
Really?
Yes.
Ah.
So then that's putting the landowners trying to force us out. Hey, we can't get that $10,000 a month back, and we want our money because we've been trying to sell this land. So now it's pressure on the landowners to
kick you guys off.
Yeah,
the land.
Let's put it. Yeah, in right. layman's turn, to right. kick us off the land so they can get the money.
And so, who is supposedly helping you identify land to move to?
It was Commissioner Amanda Fritz and the mayor's office, Josh Albert, and all the.
Josh is leaving the mayor's office. So what? And so the mayor must know that PDC has made this deal, since the city council actually controls the PDC's budget. So he's got to know PDC has made this deal. Which sounds illegal.
Let me just say,
right? That sounds a little illegal. Mm-hmm. So, you know, some lawyers out there, look into that. So you have pressure from now the owner of the property, because they're being pressured by PDC.
Right.
And so let's make sure that people understand the issue. The issue isn't that you don't want to give up the place that you are. Let me see if I understand. The issue is where you're located right now makes services extremely accessible to the people who are being served by Right to Survive.
Exactly. It's a more of a happen chance place, because as you notice, the houseless community is being, as the city officials want to say, overpopulated, because it's not enough shelter place.
Right.
So when people can't get into the shelter because they're overcrowded,
right,
they can come to Right to Dream too, and it's a safe, dry, warm place to sleep.
Right.
But let me put another spin on it. One of the landowners is dying. He may not live for a couple of more months. So,
right.
Michael
really
Wright,
pressured.
Yeah, Michael Wright is really trying to keep his word
right.
to his friend. That's partnership.
That's right.
That he'll sell his land before he want to see it go. And that's what he told us when we first negotiated. He said, I really would like to see that land sold before I leave here.
Right.
So in doing that, Michael's trying to keep his word to Dan Cassette.
Right.
Now, what we saying is, PDC, if y'all said y'all want to buy that land, get those people their money,
right,
and then negotiate with us. I mean, because then we can still stay there. If you want us to move, you'll hurry up and find us land.
That's right.
It'll be in your hand. So they trying to make this, again, a trifactor, complicated matter.
Right. And so I guess there are just so many questions.
Yeah.
Do you find people showing up at Right to Survive that have been swept off of other streets and told to come to Right to Survive?
Yeah, that's a new trend that's happening. I mean, we get people coming out of jail, the parole officers are sending them there. I said, well, I know they pay money for people to get out of jail to be housed.
Right.
So give us that money to help us with our operating costs if you want us to, you know, house some of your parolees or whatever, and people that's being swept from other areas. Even the police drop them off and say, hey, they go a place to stay. This is a nice place to stay. People that's leaving the hospital where they don't have recuperating centers in the
right.
city, sending them, you know, a guy had a heart pacer put in his heart,
right,
and they put him back on the street because he was home instead of putting him in somewhere. And there was a good friend of ours named Brewster, and he just died like 2 weeks ago. And he was at the hospital sometime in September.
Right.
And so because of him going on the street with nowhere to go, he died. And this is what's happening. Right to Dream 2 is not a good place for people that have open wounds and scars and just leaving the hospital. They need to build recuperating centers for these people to go to.
And there ought to be some laws that prohibit them from just releasing people out onto the street that they know have nowhere to go.
Exactly.
But, yeah, that's another system.
Yeah.
So we have a caller on the line for our listeners. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call at 503-231-8187. Good morning, Joanne. Sorry for the wait. Welcome to KBOO.
This land is your land. This land is my land. But anyway, I thought I'd sing it while I still can. Anyway, did you know that Mayor Hales was in Paris recently?
Yes.
I'd be afraid to go. But anyway, I need to be happy once in a while, and even just for a short amount of time. Well, a couple things on Democracy Now! I want to tell you about made me happy. First of all, in Chicago, thousands were protesting.
My hometown.
And they want May Emanuel to resign. And I think he was one of Clinton's big advisors. The second thing, I had some Irish ancestors, and this Mary Robinson was on Democracy Now! I think she was president of Ireland. Anyway, she was talking about International Human Rights Day. Thanks for the program. Bye.
Thank you. Bye, Joanne. I am happy to see Joanne is happy today. And there were things that made her that way. I have also heard from the Hazelnut Grove folks that the police are dropping off people at their location as well, or sending people to Hazelnut Grove. And it just kind of appalls me that we have declared a housing state of emergency. There is not a street in the city of Portland that you can walk down today and not see people sleeping on the sidewalk. There's not a street that you can do that in. And so clearly we've declared a state of emergency, yet our government doesn't seem to be actually responding to the emergency any different than they've ever done around how houseless issues.
Well, again, I think this is a social status thing. I mean, we just had two bad rainstorms and mudslides, and people losing their housing.
Yes.
And that's a state of emergency.
Right.
Are those people in Right to Dream 2 or Hazelnut Grove? No, they in hotels, whatever. That's a state of emergency. So a state of emergency, you get people off the street and put them inside shelter, not an encampment site.
That's right.
And so it depends on your social status, on what's the state of emergency mean to you.
That's right.
So when they see other houseless people on the street, they say, go over to this encampment site, go over to that encampment site.
Right.
Why can't they put them in these abandoned buildings
and
make recuperation center, or put them in the Red Cross where people have emergency happen and put them inside the place?
No, I absolutely agree with that. Wapato Jail as a homeless shelter, what do you think of that idea? I think that idea sucks, but I think we should put some politicians.
We can say that on that. I think it sucks too.
I think we should put some politicians in there
That goes along with the thing. Why would you put people in an environment that's in a jail setting, and that's the mentality they get? That's all they see, and you're gonna put them in behind closed doors? No, tear it down, tear the room down, rebuild it, and make it livable.
Right.
But don't put no people in those cells.
In those tiny cells.
Yeah. What are you trying to present? What are you trying to say?
I think that you're absolutely right. I think if it was redesigned to be a community center, then it may make sense. But this is like, I forget how many millions of dollars we spent to build this jail that never has had like one prisoner inside, and that was about 12 years ago now that this jail was built. But it's a great reminder of about how we use public dollars when they're public dollars and they're not your dollars.
That's how the city used. I didn't get none of that money. I used my public dollars building 10 cities.
I stand corrected. I didn't mean the collective we. I meant the city of Portland, the powers that be. But yes, let's be clear about that. And so, you know, you and I, because of our relationship, are joking and laughing.
Yeah.
But I don't want anybody that's listening to us to think that this is not at a crisis stage right now. When you first started talking, you talked about a friend of yours who 2 weeks ago died because they had just recently got out of the hospital and they were released to the street. That's serious. That, you know. Yeah. And so just like you told that story, I know you have so many other stories to tell. And so I think the biggest question is, how does the community help? I've been watching the website with Hazelnut Grove, and I know that they're trying to build out that site to make it more accessible for the folks who were there. What about Right to Survive?
Well, a lot of people who know me know I did a lot of traveling this summer. Mm-hmm. And one of my favorite places was Denver, Colorado.
Ah.
It's an organization called Denver Homeless Out Loud, where they found out that Denver Housing Authority had 10 plots of land and they were selling it to developers to build condominiums or high-rise apartments instead of using it for low-income people.
Right.
So what they did, they gathered a group of houseless people along with the tiny home concept and a permaculture organization and built tiny houses on this land and was getting people off the street. And I think it was the SWAT team and the police, they came and arrested 10 people and then sent the city works in and started tearing the tiny houses down and put the people back on the streets. And then they cry is where I hope take all the houseless community by storm and say, move along to where? Where do we go now?
Right, right.
And that's the thing of when people try to build a community for themselves to get off the street because the city officials is being lackadaisical in doing this, then they still get bombarded and be bastard and send people into a location where it's out of the way or it's under a bridge or something. And I don't think Hazelnut Grove, I take my kufi off, I commend them, but I don't think that's a good location because it's muddy and stuff. Mm-hmm. The city, it's all about location. The city should provide a better location for this organization. I think it still should go on because we the houseless community is taking care of our problem, the problem that the city officials should take care of. Again, this state of emergency for housing is not going for the people that's living in the streets. And I mean, it's emergency when there was over 1,500 people on the streets.
Right.
Now, to that count, they say that count is 3,800.
That's right.
It's more than that because, you know, it depends on when you
do the count. Right.
What time of year you do the count.
Right.
And where you do the count.
That's right.
And they not stupid. They doing this count. They going to the shelters. Nobody is going under the bridges and abandoned houses, counting people in cars.
And looking in cars. Right.
Right. They not doing none of that. Right. So we know the truth that people that live in the street and organizations.
Well, we got a lot of callers stacked up, and so we're going to go to the phone line. Hello, LJ. Welcome to KBOO. Good morning.
Hey, Joanne. How are you?
I'm well. How about you?
I am good. Hi, Ibrahim.
Hey, how's it going?
It's good. It's good. Joanne, as you know, I'm with the elders of Occupy.
Yes.
And we are in the midst of our sleeping bag and winter gear drive for R2-D2.
Yay. Oh,
thank you.
Oh, come on. Ibrahim.
Yay.
Yay. Happy, happy, happy. Anyway, okay, there you go.
Here's the situation. Please, folks. It's International Human Rights Day today, Joanne, right?
Yes, it is, yes.
All right, so do the houseless people have human rights?
Absolutely.
Do they have a right to live in dignity?
Absolutely.
Yes, they do.
And do they have a right to live in a safe condition?
Yes,
yes they do.
Are the Portland police still confiscating people's possessions because they happen to be on the street?
Yes.
I can tell you a twofold story on that when you get off the phone.
Okay, hold the story. Hold that story. Don't forget.
All right. So anyway, please, folks, if you have anything extra, sleeping bags, socks, hats, gloves, anything.
Boots.
You can drop them off at, in other words, Women's Resource Center, and they're at 14 Northeast Killingsworth Street. That's Killingsworth and Williams. Or You can drop stuff off at the Friends Meeting House, which is on 43rd and Southeast Stark. And we will be there on Fridays from 3 until 5. All right? And please, folks, this is an emergency situation.
Yes, it is.
It's gonna be a very wet winter.
Yes.
And our homeless population, houseless people, do not have to die needlessly. All right. So please dig deep, and please help out.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very, very much, and have a really great day.
You do the same. Awesome. Thank you so much for your call.
And anyway, Abraham, yes. God bless you for what you do, man.
Alhamdulillah. Thank you.
Right.
Thank
you. Bye-bye.
Bye now. And so tell us the story about houseless people losing their possessions at the hands of the police.
Well, you know that every time the police are clean and safe or these new private security guards sweep an encampment site or sweep people off the street, they take their belongings and take it and say, well, you can sit here, but you can't have all this stuff. So now they're sitting in the rain and the cold weather with no protection. So we complained to the city about it,
right.
And Clean and Safe said, since y'all complaining, we can't do it, we're not going to clean up around the area. So around Right to Dream 2 is dirty because Clean and Safe, well, we clean it up, we say we taking the people's stuff. So they pouting like little babies. They need to clean up the city and not take people's stuff. They need to learn to distinguish that.
Well, and not to mention the fact that they actually have a contract to provide cleanup service.
Exactly.
And the contract doesn't allow them to opt out of cleaning one area of the city versus another.
Exactly.
And so somebody ought to remind them that they are contractually obligated. And it's not our if I feel like it kind of contract, right?
And okay, they should also look at the St. Francis area. I talked to Josh Albert. He told me that wouldn't be sweeping because they realize in the condition that they putting the people in once they take their tents or tarps or rain gear, they in the street vulnerable with nothing. So, but the police is still sweeping. I mean, just like it's a civil rights law, no discrimination, but we are still discriminated against.
So have you talked to the police chief about this?
I haven't talked to. I went straight to the. I went to the mayor. Isn't he the police chief?
Right. There is a police chief, right?
So you went
to the mayor, and what did the mayor say?
Well, I didn't. I went to his office. I talked to Josh Albert, and he said there would be no sweep. So I don't. So people are saying that when they come, you can't sleep here, but go to Right to Dream 2 or Hazelnut Grove. So now what they doing? They sending people into Hazelnut Grove that's not adhering to their code of conduct, which is no drugs, no alcohol, no fight, no stealing. And so people are sleeping around their perimeters that's not adhering to their code of conduct.
Which is making the neighbors crazy.
Which is making the neighbors crazy. And the neighbors need to know this is a plan to make organized organization for houseless people look bad by sending an impact of people that's not supposed to be there. And I'm not saying not supposed to be there.
Right.
Everybody should be there, but not adhering to the rules to make it livable.
Right.
And so,
well, and that's what happened around Occupy, right? The exact same thing happened when police were starting send people that they knew were alcohol, they were drunk or they were on drugs, and they would just send them into the camp. And I actually think on purpose,
of course.
To try to disrupt the mindset that was there.
Because I was there, and the leaders of Hazelnut Grove saw this guy drinking beer and doing drugs. They went and said, hey, you can't do that here. Go somewhere else.
Right.
And he said, I'm Jesus. Forget you. He didn't say forget you.
Can't say that. No. But we get it.
And so,
we are on the air.
And so they called the police now, and I was kind of said, well, I'm not used to calling the police. We usually do it ourselves. And the police said, hey, this is public property. Y'all on it. Y'all can't kick it out. So they doing an oxymoronic thing, trying to make Hazelnut Grove look bad in front of the neighborhoods and stuff.
I think you know, I think the mayor has to be much more engaged. The fact that he's in Paris and he's like hobnobbing with, you know, the world leaders is all fine and dandy, but he seems to be disconnected from the role that the police are playing and just jerking people around who have no options at the moment other than being where they are.
Exactly.
So let me take a break here for a sec.
Okay.
Tell people what's coming up this morning on The Boo. At 9, Teresa Mitchell hosts Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know. At 10 is Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15, Flashpoint honors the life and times of noted Native America poet and spoken word artist John Terrell, who died yesterday.
Yeah.
The program includes an excerpt from a broadcast John Terrell did from Alcatraz in 1969. Want to thank you all, KBOO members, for your generous support of our most recent membership drive. It is because of you that this station is possible. If you missed the drive, you can still double your money by going online, clicking the tip jar at kboo.fm, clicking the tip jar, making a contribution, becoming a member, and that money is matched one for one. If you are new, or if you are updating your membership by adding more money to your monthly contribution. Those are your options for today to join the KBOO family. Also want to remind you, Sunday 8 till noon, you can drop off sleeping bags at the Friends Meeting House at 4312 Southeast Stark. That's from 8 to noon this Sunday, 4312 Southeast Stark. Or any Sunday. This Sunday and any Sunday from 8 to noon. Got it. All right. We're going to go back to the phone line. Hello, Johnny. Good morning. Welcome to KBOO.
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning.
It's definitely a pleasure to hear this conversation, even though I am disheartened and saddened to hear about all of the circumstances that our family humans are being pushed into. But I'd like to start... first of all, with two heaping hands full of gratitude for KBOO and for the volunteers and everybody with their hard work that they put into bringing information like this to the airwaves. And
well, thank you for that.
To all of the KBOO staff and everybody who volunteers there, two very big handfuls of gratitude. Like I said, my name is Johnny, and I am a Portland resident. I have been in and out of the allegedly homeless situation, all of my life. I'm not a poor person because I am rich within my heart, but my family has been broke most of my life.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll kind of get on with the information I want to bring. Just recently, 2-3 years ago, I attempted a stint in college and at Lane Community College, and I went in with the attitude of conviction and passion, and I found myself lost in this whirlwind of a different dimension that I had ever been in. And this was ultimately the last time that I found myself become homeless, and I was living in my car for about 2 months, the last term and a half of a full year of college. And my reason for going to college was a calling to be in service of humanity, become a trauma counselor. Well, so while living in my car, I found a place called, I went to a free breakfast on a Sunday breakfast, and there was somebody handing out applications for a place called Opportunity Village. And this is a tiny house village in Eugene.
Uh-huh.
And they are fully operational and they are functional. And they have been granted years of time in their place. So there are a lot of layers to like the homelessness scenario. Some people choose not to live in this, live in a home in this, how the system has presented it. Some people have chosen to, and the paradigm has shifted them outdoors and out of their home. some people run into circumstances where they have run into severe tragedy or trauma in their life.
Right.
And ultimately, becoming homeless is a very tragic and very traumatic experience. And so dealing with homeless people and the advent that they are just, you know, they are just normal human beings. They're just like you and me and everybody else. Nobody grows up, you know, in the fourth and fifth grade thinking, you know, I want to grow up to be a homeless person.
Right.
That nobody does that, you know. And so there's this, if you understand the, you know, just the concept of like even barely of compassion, then you know that, you know, we need each other and we need to be accepted regardless of where we're at. We need to be accepted. And so in the event of being traumatized, getting through that trauma is very difficult to do unless you are being held by your community and accepted at all levels. And before I ramble on too far,
well, I was just about to slip in there, but go ahead. You got another point you want to make?
Okay, yeah. I just wanted to set up the information out there that tiny house villages are possible, but there kind of has to be this little framework around it.
Yes.
The one in Eugene got a couple of two or three different churches. They got some city council members, some high hitters. And then they have what they call White Bird in Eugene. And that's like a street facilitation for homeless and for addicts. And it's like a emergency call out for like folks that need emergency.
Right.
And so that's kind of what needs to happen. We got to link these powerful things together, like some churches and some community members that are on boards, and get a board together, a board of operations or a board of council to start discussing, you know, and then it all comes in, you know, the funding and all of that kind of falls right in place. And it has been done. It can be done again. And the tiny house, there's a movement around the world for the tiny house village.
That is true. I thank you so much for your call. I really appreciate it. Ibram.
Yeah, I would like to thank you, Johnny. I mean, it does good that people recognize other tent cities or tiny houses around this country. However, Digny Village was the first tiny house concept, and people in Eugene came to me and Right to Dream too, and we went and spoke to the city council, the faith-based community. So that concept was consulted by the people here, and we got together, and now they got another one called Emerald Village there, and they fighting for another thing. I constantly go down there and talk to them and see how they're improving and see what they can improve, and we learn from each other. The same thing with Denver, the same thing in Tucson, the same thing in Olympia, Washington. The houseless community is starting to connect, and we fighting for each other's right. And that's what we doing. We building a community, something the house people don't have. Because do you know your neighbor? Do you speak with your neighbor? Say hi.
Right.
But in the house community, we talk with each other, and we network and pass things on.
Well, thank you so much again for your call. We really appreciate it. Have a great day.
Okay, thank you very much. And I will be in contact with RJD2, and I'm feeling a calling to get highly involved in this. I got a lot of energy, I got a lot of conviction, and we'll be seeing you folks soon.
Well, thank you so much. Yes, we will look forward to connecting with you, because I do think that there's a lot that we can do, we the housed community, to put pressure on the city council and the policymakers. Because guess what? A majority of the city council is up for re-election.
Hey,
and if they haven't actually started to fix this before May, then they won't be able to do anything after May. Just say that.
And they should realize houseless people can vote.
Yes, yes. You don't have to have an address to vote. That's absolutely true. It's absolutely true. We're going to go back to the phone line.
All right.
Good. Thank you. Have a great day. Good morning, Francis. Welcome to KBOO.
Hi.
Hi.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you guys for everything you do. the city of Portland has so many vacant buildings, there's no reason why anybody should be sleeping out in this rain today.
Amen.
And it just takes leadership, as you just said, Joanne.
Mm-hmm.
And whether they get voted on or not, whether they're going to be reelected or not, anybody that's in, supposedly a leader of the city of Portland should look around and be highly concerned and ashamed that anybody should have to live on the street. I'm calling for a specific question, and I don't know if you guys have heard of what is going on in Utah, and I think the gentleman, one gentleman that's involved with the program down there was up here speaking to the city. I'm not sure.
Oh, yes.
And I'm wondering, I don't know anything about the program, but as I understand it, it's like housing first, and then whatever issues you have, you deal with that after you've got a place to stay.
So I think in Utah, didn't they pass a law that actually gave everybody a stipend? Like people in need, like a stipend of like, I forget, it's like $500 or something a month, right? So that, yeah. And they housed people and gave them a stipend, right? Like as a bare minimal. And my understanding is that they actually got people off the street and into housing because they took the approach of you have to have some money to get off the street.
Right, and they also took the approach that how can you get anything together if you don't have a place to stay?
Right, that's right.
That's common knowledge. But what happened in Utah is the concept, housing first, but they didn't house as many people they say they did. They ran
that's
out of money.
And then
if you give someone a stipend, then that money is not enough to get you an apartment or a place, and that's what's happening.
Right.
That concept will work if it's affordable, if people can afford it.
Say the city of Portland established that concept and made it a reality and sincerely believed in it and put the money behind it.
Well, you got to look at affordability too, because the cheapest one bedroom apartment in Portland is now, I think, $750 or $800, and $500 not going to get you nothing here in Portland, but an 8x8, and I think that's called a jail cell.
Right. That I agree. But it would just take the initiative and leadership for somebody to
start looking at things
that way.
That is exactly right. And quite frankly, you know, if it was a city-owned property and you were paying somebody a $500 a month stipend, you wouldn't necessarily need to charge rent, right? But people would be responsible for their utilities and for, you know, whatever other basic needs are.
There's ways to work around that.
Exactly.
You know?
Yes.
The thing I don't understand is they putting people in apartments for 6 months, averaging $700 a month. Why don't they, as you say, buy these old abandoned houses and turn them to share housing when you can rent out a room for $200 to $300 a month?
Or one of those
vacant
buildings
downtown. Or a vacant building, turn them to, well, they want all the houses community out of downtown.
Right,
they
want to
redevelop.
They don't want them to be seen.
Right,
downtown,
look at the commerce and go see what they got planned on a 5 to 10 year plan for downtown.
Oh, well, you can just look at all the cranes that are downtown now during development. I mean, it's clear that downtown is being built for the people that are coming later.
Just what we want to spend our money on. You know? Right.
Thank you, Francis.
But the Pearl is flooding, hey.
Yay,
yes,
hey. There are some bright spots.
But they in a state of emergency, so they ain't going to go to no tent city. They're going to go to the Hilton.
That's what I'm
Hilton.
Talking about.
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about. Okay.
So we got a lot
of
work to do. Thank you, Francis.
Ma'am. Take care.
You too. Bye now. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. I am talking to Ibrahim Mubarak. I had it right for so many years, and now I'm going backwards again. And we're talking about the state of emergency for our houseless community and what's being done and what's just talk about being done. And basically, I think the conclusion 45 minutes into this conversation is there's a lot of talk, but there's very little action around really moving people from being on the street into inside where it's safe, dry, warm, and people can have access to the needed services to help them improve their lives.
Exactly.
Right? I think that's the conclusion we come to. So back to the phone line. Hello, Betty Lynn. Welcome to KBOO. Good morning.
Good morning, Joanne. Good to hear your voice.
Thank you.
Building on this idea of the tiny villages, and thinking about Wapato. The city says Wapato isn't feasible because it's too remote, but the Jerome Sears Armory is sheltering people in Multnomah Village, and they're running a shuttle between Jerome Sears and downtown. So I'm thinking the city owns that land around Wapato. There are 60 cells. You could put 120 people there. It probably has its own kitchen. You could and you could use Wapato as an anchor and then put tent cities or tiny villages around Wapato, and you could actually send the social service people with their laptops out there, okay, and work on site. So right. Here are some solutions. The city just needs to draw on maintenance funds from the general fund to support Wapato, and it could work.
Well, thank you. Earlier somebody mentioned Wapato, and we just kind of went, yeah. Right? But I like your creativity, right? Because if you put the services on site, right? If you have an industrial kitchen, if you have the ability to like use the land to actually build community, I think you're right. It might be an idea that could work.
Thank you.
You are very welcome. You convinced me. I was like, psh, you know. But the reality is, if the county owns the land and we've owned it forever, right?
Yes, it's fallow. It's not being used.
But I do want to make sure that once people are inside, it doesn't look like a jail inside, right? So whatever we need to do, maybe those are book nooks that, you know, where the cells used to be, I don't know, but you know, I don't want the psychological trauma
exactly
of having people who have already been traumatized waking up and going to sleep behind steel bars,
exactly,
right?
Well,
so
easily removed.
Well, I don't know if they're easily removed, right? But if they can be removed, and then the area can be made better so that it's more of a community space, then I think that could work.
Good.
So,
thank you.
So, but, you know, all it takes is political leadership. All it takes is somebody with a plan. Mm-hmm. And all it takes is us, like, putting pressure on the people that can make it happen to make it happen. And if we can't do it in the kind of downpours that we're having right now, I mean, those of us who are housed walk around drenched all day. So can you imagine what life is like if you don't have a place that you can go inside and get dry?
Well, there's a potential place.
There's a potential place, provided that we do it in the most humane manner possible.
Exactly.
Okay.
Thank you,
Joanne.
Thank you. Appreciate the call.
Pleasure.
Have a
Bye.
Great day. Thank and you. I love when my audience gets to change my mind. Right? I like that. I think that's a good outcome.
That means they're listening.
That means they're listening, and that means that they have actually thought through a process where you and I were just so flipped. No, that'll never work. Back to the phone lines. Hello, Barry. Good morning. Welcome to KBOO.
Hi. Good morning, Joanne.
Good morning.
I want to ask a question of both of you, I guess. Tell me why the two blocks in back of Washington High School aren't used for homeless?
You know, that's a very good question. We at Right to Survive, we wanted to get that whole building to turn it into a center, a resource center, right. And we could have put tents on the yard and
right.
stuff. But
Well, who kept you from doing it? Why?
The city officials, and they sold it to a developer, and I don't even know what they're using it for.
Oh, they sold it to a developer.
And then even over at St. Francis, the park where people used to go relax, they sold that to a developer, and they're getting ready to build housing on there, and they're kicking all the homeless people, the houseless people away from in that area. So again, the development, development of this city.
Hang on, at a time.
Just a second. It might be sold at St. Francis, but the city of Portland owns the land in back of Washington High School.
But I think what we just heard was that the city has actually sold the property. So that means the school and the land around the school. Right. Is what Ibram has just said.
Exactly. And they turned that.
It was only the building, building of Washington High School.
Exactly. The building was sold, but they turned that land into a poo park where dogs can go poo. And then you got to look at the concept, the mentality of the city officials. You know, they build a place where your pet can go relieve himself.
Right.
And it's a human right for a human to relieve himself. And it ain't no public restroom. What are they trying to tell us? What are they trying to say? If you don't live inside, you inhuman.
Well, then just don't listen to people that tell you that stuff.
We agree, Barry.
Okay.
Well, thank you for your call.
Yeah, but please look into it. Try and look into that, will you?
Thank you very much. We will.
Okay, sure.
All right, have a good day. Back to the phone line. Hello, Leah. Welcome to KBOO. Good morning.
Hi. Good morning. It's very interesting what you guys are talking about. I didn't know that. I went to the crisis gathering last night with all those city officials and those panels, and I listened to them. And I'm a Section 8 person. I got my eviction notice. There are no Section 8 places available in Portland or Gresham, so I have to move out of town. But I listened to those guys talk. I've been on the East Portland Action Plan Housing Committee for 3 or 4 years, and I finally just said, okay, I'm done here. I've also been listening to Amy Goodman and the climate change, and that was the elephant in the room last night. It was a question I asked, but it was not addressed. And if anybody out there has been listening to what Amy Goodman is saying and what the climate change is all about, you got to know we cannot do business as usual. Right. This is not going to happen. None of it's going to happen. It's just the game they're playing. And that's what I'm hearing with this guy. There's no intention. When you turn a place over to dogs rather than humans,
yes.
What does that say about the people are in command?
Right.
So, you know what? I'm done here. I'm going to go live in a tent, a wonderful yurt, and I'm going to find a place to do it, and I'm talking to other people. You know what? We can get off the grid doing that. It's all there. You just have to come together and help each other out. But, you know, this is absolutely, it's immoral. And you know what?
It is immoral, right?
The soul of this, of our society is corrupt to the core. So thank you, guys.
Thank you. Appreciate your call. So sorry that you have to leave. But, you know, I think it's just a matter of time before anybody who's not making more than $50,000 a year will not be able to survive inside the city of Portland. And the reality is that we keep talking about this becoming an unaffordable city. It is already an unaffordable city, just based on the development that's happened over the last 5 years. And the city pretends that they have no control over development. Like, there's like nothing we can do. That was just those bad developers, right? They pretend, and again, if they're pretending that they don't have any control and there's nothing they can do, the question is, why are they elected officials in the first place? And so somebody just passed me a note that says that there's a sweeps in process now around St. Francis at 12th and Stark. And you know, I don't get this. How can the police be sweeping houseless people when there is nowhere for them to go?
That's what I just mentioned.
They're and so I think I have a minute left. So in my minute left, let me give you two phone numbers. You should call the police chief at 503-823-0000. And then you should call the mayor's office at 503-823-4120. And here's the question. If people are houseless and there's nowhere for them to go, then why the heck are you sweeping people? Just leave them be. I mean, they're wet, they're cold. There is no place. And unless we as a city have developed more inside warm places to keep people warm and safe in this weather, it is inhumane. It is criminal to be actually to be sweeping people to where? Where are you sweeping them to? This is an outrage. I am Joanne Hardesty. Thank you so much, Ibrahim Mubarak, for being here today.
I'm on my way over.
Again, this sweep is happening right now at St. Francis on 12th and Stark. If you can be there and bear witness, please do. The public needs you. We'll see you next week. Same time, same place, same station. Thanks, Steve. As always, you make us sound good.
Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for man, don't tell me heaven is under the earth.
Live from our Southeast 8th Avenue studios, this is Community Radio, KBOO Portland. Good morning. We got a Thursday morning going at a minute before 9 o'clock. We're about an hour away from Air Cascadia. Join us for headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. And then at 10:15, it'll be Flashpoints, today honoring the life and times of noted Native American poet and spoken word artist John Trudell. The programming includes an excerpt from a broadcast John Trudell did from Alcatraz in 1969. At 11 on Between the Covers, host Lynn Molick speaks with author Todd Davies about her latest book, The Lizard Princess, the third volume in the Arcadia Wonder Tales series. And at 11:30 on Words and Pictures, Barry Deutsch unveils his new graphic novel, the third in the Hereville series. It's called How Mirka Caught a Fish. That's all coming up after Teresa Mitchell hosts an hour of Press Watch, news you're not supposed to know. That is next on KBOO.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Fiesta Flamenca Navideña on Friday and Saturday, December 11th and 12th at 7 p.m. at the Headwaters Theater in Portland. Fiesta Flamenca Navideña will celebrate the season in flamenco style with performances by Three Shine Flamenco, Stomptown Flamenco, Coro Navideño, and more. Again, that's Fiesta Flamenca Navideña, Friday and Saturday, December 11th and 12th at 7 p.m. at the Headwaters Theater, 55 Northeast Farragut Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events. KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of music, nature,